One thing we try to keep you informed about on Search Engine are attempts by governments around the world to suppress and censor the internet. Last season, we told you about such cases in China, in Italy, in Burma, and right here in Canada. But while we were in reruns over the holidays, we learned of several new efforts by several different nations to control what people are saying and doing online. Each case is alarming and surprising for different reasons, and in the coming weeks, we're going to examine them all. We'll talk again about China, where the Communist Party has announced that all online video must now be state-controlled to make sure it serves socialist values. We'll talk about Australia, where the new Labour government is demanding that internet service providers run a filtered data pipeline into every house and school. We'll hear about Japan, where members of the left are the ones calling for more state control of a very right-wing and increasingly racist online culture. And today, we'll begin by talking about what's happening in Russia. Now, every semi-totalitarian state has its own particular flavor of propaganda and censorship. For example, in China, if you dared to blog against the one-party state and its official press, your site could be banned behind a firewall, and you could be thrown into a mental asylum. But in Russia, things work differently. Sure, if you criticized Vladimir Putin's United Russia Party on your blog, you might get a visit from the police. But you're much more likely to face opposition from other bloggers, some independent, and many more who are actually employed by the Kremlin. It's a whole new kind of state propaganda with a personal touch in a country that might not even mind. And with me to talk about it from Russia is the Moscow Carnegie Center's Alex Sidorenko. Hello, Alex.
Yeah, hi.
Alex, Vladimir Putin has denied that the Kremlin exerts any control or censorship over the internet. Is that true?
Well, I would say that it's not. And basically, instead of having a big newspaper for propaganda, the government has a whole number of different groups and networks of bloggers who are loyal to the Kremlin, who react on certain issues and tell what is wrong and what is right and what is good and bad is not told by their own opinion of those bloggers, but what is being told from the Kremlin or somewhere near. People are not even aware who pays them for what they blog.
So instead of getting your news from the voice of the Kremlin in a newspaper that you know is a state-controlled newspaper, you're getting it from John's blog, and you have no idea that he's receiving his message from the Kremlin.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the Kremlin itself pays bloggers to propagandize for the state?
No, Kremlin does not do it directly. Of course, it would be like very stupid for Kremlin to do it directly. But the point is that right now there is a whole business niche for bloggers who would make propaganda. So right now, everyone who's trying to do that gets money, gets certain resources for projects, for internet projects, for paid blogging, financing from the Kremlin or for the people who stand near power and like spending this money for propaganda and control over the internet.
So rather than actually having their own bloggers on staff, they have sort of a network of affiliated bloggers. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. For example, if we take top 50 Russian bloggers, at least 20 of them would be affiliated with Kremlin or with corporations that make propaganda like for Kremlin's purpose. When speaking about Konstantin Rykov, you can really see like the quality of the website he made just for promoting Putin.
Who is Konstantin Rykov?
He is the head of the company Real Stars, like the services he made, like zaputina.ru and russia.tv. They were used to mobilize people to vote for United Russia, and especially young people who use internet. And he was elected as a deputy on the legislative elections that took place on 2nd of December.
Okay. So this guy was an internet media magnate who ran a pro-government website and then later actually got elected into public office.
Yes.
How does the Kremlin use this network of bloggers?
Well, for example, in the legislative elections. Some of the websites of prominent political leaders of like Union of the Right Forces, like it's a liberal party, and the Yabloko, it's also a liberal party, they were hacked. And they were hacked, and there was a denial of service attack on certain websites.
So, Alex, you're saying that in addition to just criticizing things that they don't like and criticizing opposition voices, they'll actually sabotage opposition websites?
Yes, they do. That happens from time to time. So that's another way of controlling people. But like, they're also not only affiliated with Kremlin hackers, but there are also like hackers who just want to do that because they really believe that like all these liberals, they do something very bad, and like they shouldn't have access to internet or to their blog to write these things anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean that makes it very confusing because Putin is so enormously popular. I mean, how can you tell if somebody is being paid to blog for the Kremlin or to hack for the Kremlin, or if they just want to because they love Putin?
Well, there are some coincidences that are too strange to be genuine. For example, like when a certain party like has a meeting, and it's really strange that all these hack attacks are made in the most important moments.
Alex, outside of these two interested parties, these government loyalist bloggers and then whoever dares speak out against them, we have 30 million Russians who are on the internet reading these blogs. Do they know that these government loyalists are connected financially and politically with the Kremlin? Are they aware of the connections that exist between these blogs and the government?
No, and that's the big problem. That's the big problem because they don't even know about their affiliations. They don't even try to ask who's paying them. And of course, like the answer is that they are paid for telling what is right and what is wrong.
Do people care? Even if they did know, do they care? Or is Putin's popularity such that people just accept that kind of corruption as something that comes with the territory and something that they don't particularly mind?
Well, right now, I guess that the majority really doesn't care. Unfortunately, it's true. Majority thinks that, like, good economical situation is worth of any kind of political rights that are being taken with each year. Like, so, like, with each year, Russian people have less and less political rights. But at the same time, like, their wealth being is growing. And I think that they don't care because they have something in exchange.
Mm-hmm. And if that ever stopped, if the economic good times ever came to an end, they would find themselves without a voice.
Yeah, without a voice, and then it will be a problem for power, because then they will realize that population doesn't want to live without well-being and without political rights. So they will try to take it back, like in the streets, with bad consequences for everybody, for the society, and for the government. And that's very sad.
Alex, thank you for talking with me today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, it was nice to speak to you, and hi, Canada.
Over the holidays, Search Engine received